monuments and memorials so abound here in Washington that on this Memorial Day weekend, I feel compelled to speak of this most crucial way of remembering. Shortly after we moved to Williamsburg, I brought my younger daughter here to Washington for her first visit. "We can do whatever you want to do," I told her. "There's one thing I need to do." I wanted to go to the Vietnam Memorial. The names of two fraternity brothers are carved on that wall. I had been to their graves in West Texas, but this was something else. Standing at the Vietnam Memorial, seeing myself reflected in the polished granite and touching those names, I thought of David's lament, "How the mighty are fallen in the midst of battle." David's song here in the first chapter of 2 Samuel is a song that after you've heard it a few times, you can't get the tune out of your mind. And it seemed to me that on this Memorial Day weekend, we might give our attention to hear that song clearly. As the story goes, a messenger has come to David with the news that King Saul and Jonathan, who is Saul's son and David's dearest friend, have been killed fighting the Philistines on Mount Gilboa. The messenger clearly believes that he is bringing good news to David. For years, Saul's madness and envy have kept David on the run. And now with the deaths of King Saul and Jonathan, the heir to the throne, all the obstacles which have prevented David from becoming king have been cleared away. We might well expect David to enter the sanctuary of God Most High and sing a song of praise and rejoicing. After all, it was the Lord who about 14 chapters ago in 1 Samuel had David anointed king. David is God's choice, God's king. But David does not rejoice at this time. Instead, a howl boils up from deep within. David gathers up his pain and grief, and he fashions them into a lament of such shattering beauty that the walls of God's house are still reverberating with these words 30 centuries later. David, it was said in the scriptures, is one after God's own heart. And perhaps it is in this psalm that we can see that most clearly. David understands tragedy. David understands what it is to ache with loss. David embraces all of human life and death, and he does not turn his face away from any of it, and he teaches us to embrace it as well. He sings, "Your glory, O Israel, lies slain upon the high places. How the mighty are fallen. Tell it not in Gath. Proclaim it not in the streets of Ashkelon." This is a song for the people of God. A song for people who have faith in a particular God. Only they will understand it. "Don't let the Philistines know," David sings. "Don't let them catch you crying." There are people who do not understand tragedy and grief. There are people who would only come to the wrong conclusions. "Don't tell it in Gath," that great Philistine city, because there they would only say, "Their God, the God of Israel, is no help at all. Their God cannot make any difference. Their God is slain on the heights of Mount Gilboa along with Saul and Jonathan. Where is your God, O Israel?" In Gath, they would be smug and slap a bumper sticker on their chariot saying, "If your God is dead, try my God." In Gath, they have a theology that deflects pain. They worship a great, great God who is high above every defeat, every disappointment. A God unsoiled by suffering. A God unstained by tears. A God who knows nothing at all about death. But tell it not in Gath. Proclaim it not in the streets of Ashkelon, but among yourselves in the community of the faithful. Weep as you remember all which has been but will be no more. Saul and Jonathan, beloved and lovely, they were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. David invites us to join in his lament for Saul and Jonathan. But it's not an invitation at all. This is a royal proclamation. David is now King David. His first act as king is to teach the people how to grieve properly. David intoned this lamentation. He ordered it that it be taught to the people of Judah. Write this down. Teach it to the people, King David says, so they will know how to speak of their pain. David composes a song for Memorial Day. It's not a rousing, patriotic melody, but neither is it a sad funeral dirge. But it is a howl of pain to God because there is no one else equipped to deal with our pain and loss. At a worship conference a few years ago, a participant asked Paul Westermeyer, professor of music and worship up at Luther Northwestern Seminary, "Dr. Westermeyer, what do you think about praise bands and worship?" Westermeyer replied, "Praise bands are fine as long as you also have a lament band." Most of the Psalms in our Psalter, though they are often overlooked, are laments. That is to say, a person or the people crying out to God in pain or loss or need or anguish. It is important for people to find the songs and rites and symbols by which we may articulate our hurt. Pain can silence us. We can lose so much that no words can be found to speak of it. The shock quiets us. We don't know what to say. I noticed that this week at Arlington National Cemetery. I fell into the company of a bunch of garrulous tourists. You might have thought they were going to Busch Gardens. On the tour bus, they were loud and laughing and chatty, and I thought to myself, this is going to be awful. But the cemetery did its work. As people drew near the graves, they fell silent. They spoke in hushed tones. The poet Linda Paston writes, "If the language of war is victims, choose silence." The Vietnam Memorial was similarly quiet. People whispered. They shushed running children. Someone has described the Vietnam Memorial as looking like a wound in the earth. And if that is so, it is fitting. The purpose of that memorial, we're told, is to heal the nation. And there is no healing without acknowledging the wound. So healing begins by telling the pain and refusing to be silent. David commands that all the people learn how to sing the song of lament. Now make no mistake about it. David is no politician trekking through a military cemetery as a photo opportunity. And neither is David composing on his guitar some sort of sweet anti-war ballad. The cost is too great for that. I had hoped to get by the State Department to see the memorial that is there, but security guards would not allow it. I told them that we allow State Department people to come to the National Presbyterian Church. Actually, the security guards were very gracious and apologetic. No need to apologize, I said. I understand the need for security. That's part of the problem. We live in difficult and sometimes dangerous times. David lived in difficult and almost always dangerous times. The one who sings this song of lament is a warrior who knows firsthand the cost and casualties of war. He has led men into battle. He has bled. He has trembled in the face of death. He knows about it. David knows the cost of war. General Martin Dempsey is the Army Chief of Staff, and working in Washington, D.C. with four stars might seem remote from battle. But I'm told that General Dempsey each day pulls out four laminated photographs and biographies of soldiers that have been killed this past year and puts them in his pocket to look at through the day. He pulls these little laminated photographs and biographies out of a box, and on the box it is written, "Make it matter." That's what David is saying with this song of lament. David wants to make it matter. David does not come into Mount Gilboa to lay ceremonial wreaths. He comes to confront God with his pain and rage. "You mountains of Gilboa," David addresses the heights themselves, "let there be no dew or rain upon you, nor bounteous fields. Let the grass go unwatered, lest it grow up and obscure our seeing what must be seen. Let no rain wash away the dark stains in the earth that have come after the battle. Let us see it all." "Look," says David. A few years ago, there was some controversy over a news photographer's pictures of flag-draped coffins filling an aircraft hangar. On Mount Gilboa, David demands we look at it all. Look at it. In the wasteland, T.S. Eliot's narrator says, "I had not thought death had undone so many." But David knows. David knows the cost of war. David knows the cost of peace, the cost of the crown that has now come into his hands. David knows the cost a free nation demands. "There, look, the bodies of the slain, and there among the slain, Saul and Jonathan, the ones we have loved. Look and remember Saul and Jonathan, beloved and lovely. Their bodies lie close together. In life and in death, they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions." David summons us to see it all and not turn away. Remember their beauty and their strength. David howls out his anguish on the heights of Gilboa. He screams his pain to anyone who will listen. But David's song is a lament. And in the Hebrew Bible, the laments may be heard by anyone or anyone, but they're addressed to God. It is to God that David howls his pain. Walter Brueggemann, professor of the Hebrew Bible, retired from Columbia Theological Seminary, has written, "The laments are addressed to someone. It is precisely in the presence of God where the hurtful issues must be dealt with. Nowhere but with God does Israel vent her greatest doubt, her bitterest resentment, her deepest anger. Israel knows that one need not fake it alone. Articulating our pain, we muster the hope that the bitter present can be transformed by God's future. Write down this lament," orders King David. "Teach it to the people so they may know how to speak of their hurt before God." You know, there aren't many places where we can speak of painful things and of terrible loss. So much in our society would shush us or comfort us with mere optimism, or seek to cheer us up with some sort of glib joke. And too many Christians would tell us, you can't talk that way in front of God. You can't talk that way in church. But David, the one after God's own heart, knows that there is a place where our pains and losses are not only respected, but also treasured, just as our joys and triumphs are treasured. It is this place of meeting where we gather before the face of God. Here in our worship is where we do not have to fake it alone. We can be brutally frank without fearing damage to God. The king commands. David, the one after God's own heart, invites us to bring our woundedness into God's house and to seek God's healing. David gives us the courage to address God because he has the confidence to know God's care and God's power to change things. The scriptures tell us that David was one after God's own heart, and we think of that most often in terms of the 23rd Psalm and David singing, "The Lord is my shepherd." But it is also true here in this catastrophe of a psalm, "Your glory, O Israel, lies slain upon the high places." God's own heart embraces tragedy and tears. God embraces disappointment, even death. That is the truth of the cross. Those who dwell in the great Philistine cities of Gath and Ashkelon will never get it. They suppose such songs as this speak of broken faith. But tell it not in Gath, but teach it to the people of faith so that they know how to trust in God. This is the way people sing and talk who understand that God has promised to be their God in each and every circumstance. This is the way worship sounds for a people who gather in the name of one who Matthew called a son of David and who cried out with it in his own lament, borrowing the words of his father David in the 22nd Psalm, my God, why have you forsaken me?" The Philistines mock and they say, "Where is your God?" And we say, "Here. Right here in our worship, here among the tattered bodies on Mount Gilboa, here among the broken and the suffering on earth, here in every place where people cry out in pain. And the God who is like this is the only God that matters, the only God who can heal us. The God who is like that is the only God who is worthy of our praise. All praise be to our God.